Hello and welcome to the RTE Rugby World Cup podcast, edition 2. For this campaign, we're all happy as tickled trout this Monday morning as we cast our minds back on a good victory at the weekend and ahead to what now looks odds on like a quarterfinal versus South Africa. First ever World Cup meeting between the two teams. Bit premature, but it's going to happen, I think we all agree. I'm here in studio with Michael Glennon, and Donal Lenihan is joining us from Japan and Eddie O'Sullivan is joining us from down the road. But first, Michael caught up yesterday, fresh news with Jordy Murphy, and got his reaction to, I suppose, his disappointment as well as being left out of the World Cup squad, but also his reaction to the Irish performance. Let's hear from Jordy.
Well, I'm certainly delighted for the boys who have put in that kind of performance this morning. Great start, obviously, a bit of a confidence builder for everyone involved. And I just thought from minute one they really took it to the Scottish, which was great to see. It was a strange feeling, I suppose, watching it this morning. See, supporting the lads 110%, but part of you always wants to be there. But that's the nature of the game. They can only take 31 to a World Cup, so unfortunately I fell just short of that. And look, I'd never wish ill upon anyone, but I just have to stay ready, and it's a nutritional, physical game, so I have to stay fit, which I'm doing at the moment, in with Ulster, and we're kicking off our season this weekend already, so I'll try and do that, and if the phone call comes, I'll be ready to go at a second's notice. So,
has Joe spoken to you about where he wants you to be? Are you available for selection for Ulster, or are you just to stay on ice in case the call comes?
No, I'm definitely available for selection. Sure, you want people to come in ready, and the best way to do that is to be playing rugby. So I've already played kind of 45, 50 minutes for Ulster in a pre-season about a week ago, and fingers crossed now on selection going forward. On Friday we play Ospreys at home, so now my focus is 100% on Ulster for the moment, but like I said, if the call comes, I'll be ready to take it.
What was the conversations like with Joe over the last month? Was he kind of keeping you updated of where you were in the pecking order? I guess if you look back and you saw the frontline players, Dan Levy and Sean O'Brien, and going back further that Jamie Heaslip had fallen out, that you would have come up a bit. Was Joe keeping you abreast of where you were in the pecking order?
No, I think it's just when we first went in with the 45-man squad, everyone's got an opportunity to go, and the best thing you could do is just try and stay fit and available for selection for as many games as possible, and that's what I did. And look, at the end of the day, decisions have to be made, and unfortunately I fell on the wrong side of it. Well, for me personally anyway, I fell on the wrong side of it, but it's just one of those things. Just said keep the head down and keep working away all through pre-season. That's what I tried to do, and you're not getting kind of one-on-one, this is exactly where you are, you're just inside the 31 or you're just outside the 31. You just got to work as hard as you can, and fingers crossed you get picked.
So if you maybe turned into a rugby fan this morning and were looking at your teammates, the back rows especially did excel.
Oh, absolutely. Look, I thought they were quality. Pete unfortunately went off early enough, but when Jack Conan came on, I thought it was seamless, and he was really, really quality, powerful carries, and kind of tackled everything inside. I thought CJ, some of those kind of bundling runs, he looked quality as well, looked really hungry. And Josh as well at the breakdown was a menace and got a quality turnover with a few minutes to go when we were down to 14 men as well. Those kind of small things, well, not small things at all really, that kind of really, really frustrate the opposition. I thought the back row were quality today.
I suppose when we look at it again, we'll see that Scotland didn't put up much of a fight. They were a lot poorer than a lot of people would have been expected. Was the main battle today that Ireland were able to, you know, deal with themselves? Was the challenge coming from Ireland? As it turned out, Scotland were poor. Did Ireland have to deal with their own challenges internally, getting a monkey off their back about how the warm-ups had gone?
Yeah, well, at the end of the day, look, the warm-ups are warm-ups. They don't actually matter for anything. And we were told on day one that our pre-season programme was going to try and build us up as much as possible so we can peak at the World Cup. And I think we saw that today, where they kind of, from minute one, just physically dominated Scotland. Like, yeah, you can say Scotland were poor, but I think Ireland were very good considering the circumstances, the conditions. They played them as well as they could have. They kept the game tight and just physically dominated Scotland. And I think that kind of shows in the first three tries, where they were all scored by forwards, pick and goes close to the line or the driving maul. So, no, I think it's just a confidence builder, definitely. But I don't think they'll be resting on that. Look, it's a six-day turnaround and they've got to play the tournament host, to aren't short of some upsets in the past and who have been quality the last couple of, not just the last few months, but the last couple of years. So No, it's exciting times ahead, but no, it was definitely a good start. 5 points is always good.
There was a lot of boxes ticked today from what Joe would have been wanting out of a first game.
Yeah, definitely. Like I just said there, 5 points is a great way to start, but definitely just physically dominating the opposition. I thought our scrum looked really, really strong. Defensively looked really good, both in the pack and out the backs, and the back three, which I suppose externally a lot of people were saying, oh, they may not be as experienced as people would like, but I thought they really took it to the Scottish back three, which historically with people like Hogg and Maitland and stuff are really impressive players. But I thought our back three were really, really quality, even on a day like today where the ball was like a bar of soap. People like Andrew Conway and Jordan and Jacob getting up in the air and maybe not catching them cleanly, but winning those 50-50s when they bounce back and things like that, and just making sure they were up in the contest every time. I thought it was really impressive.
A lot was spoken about the lineouts and in advance of this, and we were going over without Devin Toner as well, but I think it was 12 from 12 today, and Joe seems to have got that call right.
Yeah, well, it looked strong today, didn't it? Again, you can't read too much into pre-season games, but yeah, like as a whole, the forwards wouldn't have been pleased with how the lineouts had gone in pre-season, but Simon Easterby has been in there for a couple of years, and he's done a fantastic job. And I know the boys would always back themselves to kind of not just look for the easy option, but to definitely win quality balls so we can set it up for the backs as well as possible. And I think they really did that today, especially in those tough conditions, and they answered a lot of critics, and it was just great to see.
Did you watch New Zealand against South Africa?
I saw bits of it, yeah.
What did you think?
I thought it was attritional anyway. It's one of those things, isn't it? You give New Zealand an opportunity and there you go, two tries, and next thing you're two scores down. And then I thought South Africa bounced back really well, especially just after half time. They kind of went back to route one and what they're really, really good at, which is just being incredibly physical. And they really took it to New Zealand and got within a score or so, which was impressive. But look, New Zealand are just such a good team. If you give them that kind of breathing space, they're usually going to beat you. But no, two quality outfits, and fingers crossed everything goes well now in the group and we get to play one of them at the end of it. But whoever we play, it's going to be a tough game.
It looks like we will have had fair warning, because even when South Africa were 3-0 up and they could have gone 6-0 up, they had actually dominated, made the Hull Blacks look pretty ordinary. Was that more intimidating if we have a month to stew over what the South Africa can do when we're likely to face them?
I don't think so, really, because I know it sounds cliched, but it is one game at a time. And like I said, we're playing the tournament hosts in less than a week, so they're very much having to focus on that. But look, like, if there's one thing I can say about Joe Schmidt and the coaches, is they're very, very well prepared when it comes down to games. So they would have looked at all the kind of dynamics and permutations of what might happen, and I'm sure they've already got plans bubbling away for whatever does happen in the end. But when it comes to it, I'm sure they'll drill the lads and have them as well prepared as possible. So depending on who we play, it's obviously going to be a different game plan, but they'll definitely have something in place for it.
Did you have much dealings with Felix Jones? Do you know him?
Yeah, I played with Jonesy a couple of times. Great fella. And then obviously played against Munster the last couple of seasons where he was coaching and stuff.
Joe kind of said to us in the media one day that, you know, he kind of let it slip that he wasn't one bit happy with the decision to go over. Obviously, it's a free world. Felix Jones can do whatever he wants. But how much of an insight can he provide, and how dangerous is that to Ireland? Do we have to switch up a lot?
I don't think we have to switch up a lot, but I suppose he's been in the environment, and I think was it the tour to USA and Japan that he was also on for a bit as well, but that's over 2 years ago now. We've come a long way since then, and a lot has changed as well, and that's the thing about Irish rugby as a whole. They're kind of evolving the whole time, so a lot of things would have changed between now and then. And look, I'm sure you can read into it as much as you want, but I don't think they'll be too worried about it.
There's talk now maybe that Japan will probably try and target Scotland, seeing what both sides offered, and maybe not select our strongest team against Ireland. What's the ambush that Japan could have for Ireland? What do Ireland have to look out for?
Well, I think we only need to look back at the last World Cup, where it's actually with the whole squad watching in the team room as they obviously put on that historic show against South Africa, and it was just incredible. And I think before the game, if someone had told you Japan are going to beat South Africa today, you would have laughed at them. But that's the potential banana skin that they are. And the last couple of years, it's not like that was a one-time thing. They've kind of been putting in performances month after month for the last couple of years. And tournament hosts going to have an incredible support behind them. And they're going to be seriously buzzed up. So, look, I wouldn't be thinking too much into what team they might play and stuff. Like, if you were in their camp, they might even be thinking, well, look, if we beat Ireland, there's no reason why we can't go and top the group. Do you know what I mean? And if they were able to top the group at their home World Cup, that would be something incredible. And they've made history before, and I'm sure they want to make it again.
Yeah, first and foremost, the human bit, Michael. Unlucky not to be there.
Yeah, well, as we were speaking about there, he was in the mix with Jamie Heaslip, Sean O'Brien, Dan Levy a few years ago. And if you had imagined that three of those guys would drop out, that Geordie wouldn't make a 31-man selection, you know, especially after his 2018, it would be amazing. So, yeah, it's really hard luck on Geordie. And he was speaking yesterday at the Aviva Minis in Lansdowne Road. And obviously that wouldn't have been planned too far in advance, because it's only a couple of weeks since the squad was announced. So, you know, he fronted up, and he was eager to point out that he's on standby, and the way these things go, it's easily imaginable that he would get a call.
Yeah, I mean, if you see his name in there with Reese Ruddock and lads like that, you wouldn't be amazed. I mean, Van der Fleer is absolutely tearing it up. Size-wise, is that probably the... I don't know, we can't get into Joe's head, many have tried, but was that kind of the final call on it, just size?
I don't know. I know, so in the first warm-up match against Italy, maybe it was an audition between Reese Ruddock, Tommy O'Donnell and Geordie Murphy, and Reese Ruddock really stood out in that game. If you think overall about Joe bringing Chris Farrell instead of Will Addison, John Klein instead of Devon Toner, and Ruddock maybe instead of Geordie, it looks like when we're on a collision course, he needs to have the ammunition for that battle.
Well, he certainly does, because let's talk about the back row with the lads. Now, good morning, Mannix. How are you?
Dara, how you doing?
Are you missing us over there?
Not really. I tell you, it was a great atmosphere in Yokohama last night. As we've come to expect, no matter what the sporting occasions, the Irish seem to come out in their droves. And it was no different. Yesterday we arrived in the stadium about 2.5 hours beforehand. And you come up this vast stairs, if you like, into a huge concourse. And there was the screen, Italy and Namibia was up on the screen, and all you could see were green jerseys everywhere, sitting down. Now, it helped that there was, I think, one of the Heineken sponsors bar right next to it. But at that stage, even they were in full voice, and it kind of, you know, laid the grounding, the expectations when the team came out. Brilliant atmosphere again, and wow, I mean, what an opening 16 minutes of the game. So, you know, as you say, it was great to wake up in Tokyo this morning. In the knowledge that win that we knew was going to set Ireland up in the pool was there, but I don't think any of us thought that it would have been as convincing as it was.
That was it. And Eddie, yourself and myself on the box and the other lads yesterday, we were talking about the fact that it was, of course, a game you have to take in isolation, but it also had a dividend of four or five immediate things, avoiding New Zealand, possibly being top of the list, but... you know, also just that flexibility it gives Joe Schmidt now to control the flow of the tournament.
Yeah, I think there's a great sense of relief about the fact that we won the game and we won it pulling up. We thought Scotland were going to be a tricky one for us, you know, and they can be. I think there was the expectation it could be a very tight game, and if it rained, that, you know, maybe it's come down to the hot football. But I think the way Ireland started the game, the first quarter was just out of the blocks and incredible. They couldn't have managed it better, really, and Scotland were blown away. And I think just a sense that we have found a form again, which, you know, to be fair, hasn't been kind of jumping out in the Six Nations. The two big games that bookended the tournament, we didn't look good in those games, and we had our foibles during the warm-up. So there was reason to be a little bit edgy about it.
For
but
sure.
I think the fact that we blew Scotland away so quickly as well, it didn't... Sometimes with Scotland, you know, they throw everything at you and it takes maybe the second half before you get the two-score spread and you can kick back and you know, you're over the line. But we were over the line yesterday. Like, once that loose pass from Finn Russell went into the backfield and it was hacked off, he hit the post, suddenly thrown to Ireland, you knew that was Scotland's goose was cooked, because it was inevitable the way Ireland were playing at that moment. They were going to score from the 5-minute scrum. And that's a great sense of relief in that. And then they just went on and kicked on and won the game very comfortably. So there's a sense of relief around that. I think we believe we're back where we want to be in terms of the World Cup, and getting there on the first day with no tricky pits to it. It was excellent. So everyone's upbeat this morning. All the reasons you said to continue that we'll win the pool now. Joe Schmidt has a wriggle room in terms of his selections. I doubt that Japan will go after us next weekend. They'll keep their powder dry for Scotland. All those things are good. All the things are positive. It's up and at them.
Yeah, it is. And Donal, I was thinking about Japan, and it's hard enough trying to second guess Joe Schmidt, but trying to second guess the Japanese strategy is different. But I'd imagine they would give it a lash and hope maybe that they can hang in there, and even a losing bonus point could be handy for them. You never know. But I would again imagine, it's all speculation, that if Ireland are 15-20 clear after half an hour, that they won't absolutely empty themselves because they'll have an eye on the Scotland game.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And there's two issues there, really. The first thing, Japan, having played in the opening game, they have 8 days to prepare for Ireland. Ireland have a 6-day turnaround, but I'd expect Joe Smith will make changes for that Japanese game. I think maybe Jamie Joseph, the Japanese coach, having watched the way Ireland played last night, he will know that it's possibly going to be a far more difficult task than he might have envisaged even a couple of weeks ago. But the key element then is Scotland were so bad that they will feel that they'd have a chance of beating them. And also, given they're playing Scotland in the last game, Scotland have a match against Russia 4 days earlier, whereas Japan will have an 8-day lead into that Scotland game. So all the advantages are with them. Now, you'd expect Scotland will obviously have to rotate. I would imagine by that game, the Russians will be completely out on their feet. But there's huge pressure on Scotland. I mean, I don't know whether you picked it up on the television last night, but just watching those Scottish players going down the tunnel into the dressing room at halftime, they were shell-shocked. Gregor Townsend, I know there was a picture, came up on the screen. He looked shell-shocked. They have a massive battle ahead of them, whereas you flip that, 180 minutes of rugby, the atmosphere in the Irish camp now. And when you consider, you know, we've been talking about the Scottish game for, it seems, for almost a year. The players have been together for 3 months, and, you know, Eddie will know the anxiety that builds up within that squad when you're preparing for a World Cup. Firstly, because you've got a wider group, and of the 45, there is always the date of the cut-off when only 31 make it, and you have people like Jordy Murphy that you referred to earlier who get the bad news. But then you make the 31 and you're anxious, you watch, like there was, you know, a lot of action, five games, in fact, before Ireland got to play yesterday. So the players would be anxious, wanting to get out there. But the sense of I suppose, relief on one hand, but the confidence levels from performing in the manner that they did. And, you know, the fact that Joe Schmidt had the luxury of taking your Johnny Sexton's, Conor Murray's, you know, your main guys off the field with so much time left, and the fact that the bench did so well when they were introduced, you know, it all would suggest that Ireland are a good place, and that certainly Scotland and Japan will have a lot of thinking about before, you know, over the course of the next couple of weeks.
Tis, Eddie, it's unprecedented, I suppose, in our World Cup rugby history that, like, after day 3 of the tournament, there's a sense that you can almost target day 27 or whatever it's going to be, a quarterfinal.
Well, that's down almost to the luck of the draw, because there's no doubt the game against Scotland was the defining game in the group. You know, we don't envisage losing to the other three teams. I mean, so the Scottish game was crucial in setting it up. I can't remember us being in a World Cup where we got that game out of the way and we knew we've got the big one behind us.
Yeah.
And look, it's just a question of keeping our heads and seeing the rest of it through. I remember in 2003 we had to play Namibia and Romania before we got to play Argentina. You know, so like the first two games you're trying to find your feet, and 07 we didn't find our feet in the first couple of games, but this game, this time round, we hit the ground running. I mean, even down in 2011, I was involved with the USA, and we played Ireland in New Plymouth in the first game. It was Ireland's first game. It wasn't their biggest game in the pool, but they were very nervous in that game against us, because that game went, you know, we went for the full 80. We actually scored on the last play of the game. But the game was won, but it wasn't done and dusted until after 60 minutes. And Ireland weren't at the best of their form in that first game. But then they went on, they beat Australia and they won the pool. You know, so the fact that this is done and dusted in terms of, in the best sense of the word, the big game was Scotland. As Donald pointed out, we've been talking about the Scottish game forever, it seems. And to go out then and demolish Scotland off the bat, like the value in that alone in terms of the lift it gives everybody, the feeling that everybody, we're all in the right place now, it's just about steering the ship, you know, through a few more gaps and we'll be there. That's an unusual place to be, that the big game is out of the way early doors and it's all in our own control now. I think that's a sense there. There's a sense of relief about that, a sense of euphoria as well to some extent that we did it so well.
I was hoping maybe to, I know over the next 3 weeks there's going to be a lot of hype building up and kind of be up to us to maybe put a dampener on the hysteria. To some extent, but if you recall after the France match in the Six Nations, like I was just looking back at some of the quotes from Joe. This past season. So we struggled, we beat Scotland and Italy, but it wasn't convincing. And then Joe said, after we beat France, it's taken a while, but we've got a rhythm back. I don't think I've ever seen a team control 40 minutes like we did in that first half. So I don't think it's a direct comparison, but we have also heard coming out the same messages coming out of the Ireland camp about a sense of relief. And this is who we truly are. And it only took 6 days against Wales.
For Wales to put us back in our box.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'd just be interested in hearing the lads' thoughts on why is it different this time?
Good point.
If it's the same messages coming out from the camp.
Go ahead there, Mannix. Why do you think it's different this time? We all sense it is.
Yeah, I think it's different circumstances. The Six Nations, you know, with the possible exception of Italy, they're all, you know, quality opposition. I mean, over the next 2 or 3 weeks, Ireland, we're looking at Japan, we're looking at Russia, we're looking at Samoa. Now, we'll have to see Samoa. They don't play till tomorrow, so we get a glimpse of them, and there's always a danger of the physical nature that they bring to the game. But, you know, I don't think there's any question that, you know, when you look at the way the squad has worked out, players will be so keen that if they get any minutes in those games, knowing that there is a huge quarterfinal coming up, that they will just grasp it with both hands. So I think the attitude is different. World Cups, you're lucky if you get to go to one. Some Rory Best, of course, going to four. The likes of Johnny Sexton will look back on his career with disappointment when it comes to World Cups. So, you know, players like that will be driving this to such an extent to say that, you know, we can't afford to waste this opportunity once again. He would have been there in 2011 when, as Eddie pointed out, we topped the pool for the first time, beat Australia, and we were off the mark against Wales in the quarterfinal.
Yeah.
I don't think Joe Schmidt would allow Ireland to fall back in terms of you know, areas that Michael is alluding to that may have happened in the World Cup and certainly are in the Six Nations. So I think there's a different dynamic working here. I think there's a sort of a parallel scenario in that the management team, knowing now that it's in a quarterfinal, it's South Africa and not New Zealand, if everything goes to plan, it just gives you an opportunity to be making your plans in the background. They can manage the squad exactly the way they want to without the pressure of sort of having to go out to beat a major nation. So I think the dynamic has changed dramatically here.
Yes, and Eddie, like looking ahead to, which we're allowed to a South Africa match, and we all know that Joe's, you know, going to be deconstructing South Africa and a game plan for that particular one. We saw South Africa looking awesome in their power, which is one of the themes of the tournament that I suppose is unanimously agreed on. And it just brings back the emphasis to our back row on the day. We heard earlier from a man who didn't make it. We've Rhys Ruddock, we've CJ, Josh van der Fleer. Peter, of course, if he recovers from the HIA, which is only first phase, which we hope. And obviously the way he plays, you can never be sure that he'll be able to turn up the next day because he's so brave. But I mean,
just on that one, Dara, I think it's come out already today here that he's passed the second level of the HIA, which is good news. Even though, and I think Bundiaki has as well. So
we're
from
loaded.
That point of view, now that doesn't mean that you know there's still stages to go.
Mm.
And in any event, I don't think you know, would you chance playing them on Saturday? I don't think you would. But sorry, just to make that point.
No, it's a good point. But it's just like, again, I mean, this is pretty simple stuff. But I was thinking of the pain that these men, the positions that they put their bodies in, especially against South Africa. I mean, you must have to kind of hypnotise yourself to do what your brain is telling you not to do. Put yourself in a jackal position there with some of these Bock bullets flying at you. I mean, that will be something. Eddie?
Yeah, well, look, we've beaten South Africa before. Like, we can get into a position here where we turn South Africa into superhumans, you know. They have as many bones in their backside as we have. Now, they probably hit harder than we do, but I've always believed that the way to beat South Africa is to box clever against them. Yeah, we can't go the same route we went against Scotland. Like, we physically pummeled Scotland to death, and they were, as Donald said, they looked shell-shocked after 20 minutes. Not that they should have been, because we've done it to them before. There was the right game plan on the day to put Scotland away, and once they couldn't cope with it, it was over. And that's that job done with spades, as they say. But like, I think that the Springboks offer a different challenge, as you say. They will be what they will be. We've dealt with them before, though. You know, it will be very intense because it'll be an all or nothing game. I think that we will have to play a different way against the Springboks. I don't think we can go toe-to-toe with the Springboks and beat them up physically like we beat Scotland up. I suppose I would guard against getting too euphoric again after yesterday. We did everything we could yesterday. Nothing more could be asked of the team. But at the end of it, as we said from the bat, that Scotland team was awful. It really was very bad. Now you can say, well, they're only as good as we let them be. But I don't think the box will be shell-shocked by us running hard at them, you know.
No.
So it's a different game plan for the Springboks. He has time now, as Donald was saying, to go through the next few games, get the results, and be careful to get the results, not to put ourselves in any tricky situation. And you know, get the squad rotated, keep guys fresh, hopefully avoid injuries. But I think his next job is to get the guys who haven't played yet, the Rob Kearney's, Robbie Henshaw, Joey Carberry, Keith Earls, get them on the field, get some game time under their belt, and obviously, you know, game time where they find their feet and enjoy themselves, which is possible against the oppositions coming up. So when we do get to the South Africa game, we're locked and loaded. But I would say we'd have to come at that game in a different way than we came at Scotland yesterday. And that will be the challenge. I think the Springboks will be hugely physical. The notion of them heading back to South Africa after losing a World Cup quarterfinal to Ireland is definitely not on their agenda. They would find it almost impossible to swallow that. So they'll be up to 90. But we have beaten the Springboks before. Even in this cycle, we've beaten them. We know how to deal with them. So I think that's the big thing. I wouldn't talk them up to the point that, you know, these are superhuman. You know, as I said, they're big, they're strong, they're physical. We know what they'll bring. And we can use that against them in some ways if we box club.
How, Eddie? Yeah, how do you neutralise that or turn it to your advantage? I suppose that's what we're all
There's two problems. Like, one is when they have the ball, and the other one is when you have the ball. When they have the ball is a bigger problem, because they're going to do what they do. When you've just got to be up for it on the day and get yourself to that pitch, and there's going to have to be a lot of chop tackling. If we go in high against these fellas, we'll be just roadkill. So we chop and we block at the ruck. That's going to take a lot of bravery and a lot of commitment. But if you can't do it against the Springboks in the World Cup quarterfinal, you'll never do it. So there'll be no lack of motivation there. In terms of our attack, I think that's the more interesting debate. We will have to be able to move them around, find spaces between the defenders, because they're come flying up. I don't think Erasmus is going to change his defence system, which is a fairly chaotic up and in system, which upset New Zealand greatly. The way to beat that is, by and large, is to either, you know, pull them apart and go between them, or else to go around the back of it off a spot pass out wide. That's kind of technical, but they're the ways to go. It won't be rolling up our sleeves, putting our head down, running into Springboks that'll do that. So I think that's the most interesting part of that game, is how we'll craft the attacking game plan.
Exactly, yeah.
Pick them apart. But look, it's great to be in the position where we have practically, you know, the bones of a month to prepare for that. Now, again, I don't want to dismiss the other teams because it's a bit of a balancing act. And who knows, what if we get an injury to Johnny Sexton or to Conor Murray, God forbid. But that's the other things that can put throw a fly in the ointment very quick for us, and it's a different discussion in the lead up to that game.
Sure it is, but I think as Eddie Jones said, is it like that nobody has their full squad fit. Like, it's just the nature of the game is nobody has their first 15 ready in a World Cup scenario, but we hope obviously that some key pivots like that won't be the ones that unfortunately are put up in the stands. Back to that point, Donal, to kind of craft a strategy to neutralise, I think it was Eddie's word, South Africa, how would you approach it?
Look, we'll have plenty of discussion about that before it happens, but look, Eddie's 100% right. You're not going to go out and bully the Springboks. But the beauty about playing this particular South African team is you know exactly the way they're going to play and you know what their approach is. And I have no doubt Joe Schmidt has been thinking about that for a long, long time. As a consequence, we may see a different makeup to the team that played so well against South Africa yesterday. I mean, for me, Josh van der Vleer was incredible yesterday. I thought, yeah, you know, his best performance in green by a mile, his work rate, his ability in the tackle, his ability just to work, make a tackle, get back in his feet, go for the poach, support the ball carriers. When, you know, we had a couple of line breaks, he was always the guy on the shoulder. But, you know, is he the guy that you play at seven against South Africa? This is all part of the debate, and that, I'm sure, is something that Joe Schmidt isn't only thinking about now. Joe Schmidt has been working out in his head, you know, there was always this possibility, and, you know, again, we have to be respectful in terms of there's 3 weeks to go until we get to this point. But Joe Schmidt has been looking at how to approach this game for a long, long time. And, you know, we will have to be smart. It is a case of one tackle in, one fillet in over the ball. The one thing about South Africa is I think they're hugely dependent on Andre Pollard. They really only have 110. You know, they've Elton Yankees in their squad, but I don't think he was ever up to international standard. And they have Francois Steyn is sort of their reserve 10, and he doesn't play in that position.
Right.
Now, Pollard, and talking to some of the South Africans who were at the Ireland game yesterday, they'll tell you, Pollard has had a really good, or appalling. When he missed that kick, the one that came off the post, his head went and he was under pressure.
That
so,
was some moment,
you know,
yeah.
There's an area there, I think, that Ireland, exactly, that Ireland could challenge as well. So,
okay. Yeah, I suppose I should I should slap myself here because it is 4 weeks away and I couldn't resist going into a preview of a match that may or may
exactly
not happen. But so we'll come back down to earth a little bit.
Well, as Eddie said, I think the yeah, but look, it can change overnight with those injuries to key players. And in every squad, regardless of the backup that you have, and we feel that we have better backup now than possibly we ever had in a World Cup, but there are always key players. You go back to 2011. Dan Carter and Richie McCaw were the two key players in the New Zealand squad, and they just barely got over the line, you know, beating France that day. Carter, as we know, got injured reasonably early. They were down to the third or fourth choice out half. But even Richie McCaw played with a broken bone in his foot right through that World Cup. He never trained during the World Cup, and they just, as a consequence, got over the line. So regardless, you know, there are key players in every team, and you just hope and pray that those guys are there when you get to this point in the tournament. A lot of them didn't make it that far, as we famously know, 4 years ago, and we paid the price for that. So you know, so we just need to temper things a little bit in terms of there's three games to come. I have no doubt that we will win those games, but it's at what cost, and you know that could change the dynamic over the next few weeks.
Which brings us neatly to selection for Japan. What's your gut on that, Eddie?
I think, you know, if Rob Kearney is fit and Keith Earls is fit and wherever Carberry is, I think they'll all have to come in. Donald's right. He just has now to take some pressure off the guys who played yesterday, you know, as much as he can. The key guys, the guys who put in the big shifts, especially in the back row. You know, even yesterday having won comfortably, that game takes a toll it'll take a psychological toll. The build up to that game would have been incredible. So like, guys, it's like a pressure cooker situation. But it, there's other guys as well chomping at the bit. The sooner he can get those fellas in the field as well to get them a taste of things. So I think he'll make a good few changes. He'll make as many changes as he thinks he can get away with. So I would say for sure Murray will have to be rested. I'd say Sexton will have to be rested. Bundyaki will rest it. Peter O'Mahony will be rested. James Ryan is a guy who we've got to mind. He's a jewel in the crown.
Yes.
You know, fair to him. He's a phenomenon. And this is I said this a while back. I think this is his opportunity, which I think he'll take to step onto the world stage. You know, it's his moment. But look, he has plenty of options. In fairness, Donald touched on it there. I've been saying this for a while now. To be fair to George Schmidt, the one thing he's done in the last 4 years is he has worked assiduously as building that depth into the squad that hurt us so badly in 2015. The one area, of course, is the full-back area, which, you know, I think Lorimer may have made his case to have solved that for him. But going in, we thought our only option was Rob Kearney. But Kearney needs to get on the field now and get a game under his belt. But look, I think we have the depth rotated. We have the horses. That's not going to take away from us. And the guys who get on the field in the next three matches are going to have to put up or shut up, because I think he'll be ruthless about selection for the South Africa game, because it's a once-off and you don't want to make any mistakes there. So I think the energy now on the squad will mean fellas will be jumping out of their socks to get a chance, and I'd be pretty sure he'll start rolling guys in now, get them a taste of the tournament as soon as possible starting next weekend.
Yeah, no, I think that all that stuff is
yeah, and
is
I think,
solid.
Eddie, the beauty of that, Dara, as well, is because you're rotating to such a degree and you have the facility to rotate, everybody feels really part and parcel of it, because you're getting out onto the field, you're playing your part, you're not just involved in the build-up and training. You've got a huge role to play. And if you get to that point where you're playing against South Africa and Joe Schmidt outlines, this is the way we're doing it and this is the personnel that I need to carry out my game plan, everybody will buy into that. And you know, it's brilliant now that over the course of the next 3 weeks, all 31 players should have the opportunity of contributing to the cause.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Again, it's new territory and positive territory.
And that's the value there of the win yesterday.
Yes.
Is that he has that latitude. No, look, worst case scenario, had Scotland nicked the win against us, we'd now be looking down the barrel of a Japanese team sizing us up for a turnover. He'd have to recalibrate everything in terms of going to that Japanese game. The confidence of the squad would be down. It's a completely different landscape this morning, you know, based on yesterday's result.
Yeah, we have a little nest egg, I suppose. Just one quick one for you both. Eddie, are we working together Saturday morning? I assume we are. Are we?
We are. Yeah, we are indeed. Yeah.
Great. I'll see you during the week. So looking forward to that. And Mannix, you mind Hugh and enjoy the sights and sounds of Japan. And we'll speak to you soon.
Great, Tara. Thank you. Cheers, Eddie.
Slán.
All the best.
Michael, you wrap it up for us. Anything else there that's happening? I mean, it's all Ireland all the time.
I know we covered the Scotland match, but it was actually interesting with the lineouts. So obviously there was so much talk about the lineouts in advance, and yesterday was 12 from 12, 100%. But the funny thing is that a couple of those were lucky ones. So when things are going up, things are going your way.
And Eddie's talking about the one that hit the post for Conway.
That's one. Plus, one went over the top and it bounced for, I think, Van der Fleer. And another one landed. Porter looked up and there was the ball. But it wasn't meant for Porter because he was standing on the ground at the back of the lineout.
Yeah.
So it just goes to show you that if things are going your way, a couple of weeks ago against England or against Italy, when Best was throwing them, they would have bounced the other way.
Yeah.
It would have hit off Porter's head.
Yeah.
And the fact that maybe that is a good sign that things have changed, that we got 12 out of 12 and a couple of lucky bounces along the way.
I didn't realise you were so superstitious, but no, I take your point. But I guess it's when you get that change in your luck and the luck's turned sour, how you respond to that. Adversity is the real thing, and no one can see us lucking out 80 minutes against the box.
Exactly.
It's going to take a bit more than that. Anything else pop up outside of Ireland or Scotland before we wrap it up for a happy week?
No, I mean, the other big match, of course, was the one we spoken about. And
best 20 minutes of rugby we've seen.
Yeah, and it was fantastic. And when we were deciding who would we like to play here in a quarter final, the All Blacks did look like a completely different team in the first 20 minutes. So they looked almost, South Africa were able to neutralise them. But anyway, we're probably not going to meet them until the final.
There we go. Unless England do a job. Is the draw working that way? I should check out my facts there. And France-Argentina, great game in terms of quality. I suppose it was box versus the All Blacks. But in terms of drama, that was a cracker as well. And you know what? It's only, what is it? Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Day four today, is that all? And a full calendar of games. Okay, I'm getting too happy. So it's about time to pull the plug on this episode. Thanks indeed for listening to us here on the RTE Rugby World Cup podcast. We'll be with you twice a week between now and the end of the tournament. Thanks to Michael Glennon, and thanks to Donal for joining us on the phone from Japan, and thanks to Eddie, who's part of our team throughout, and thanks to Gary for producing, Gary Moran that is, and Sheila Nivelle on sound. We're back again on Thursday. Go easy.